With that, I'd like to introduce our head football coach, Carl Durrell.
Have one goal in mind, which is to bring a championship.
With a trick play, they've got Nixon behind the D. He's gonna go.
They give it off on the end around the LaVisca Chenault, who runs over the top of a defender.
Montez, sideline ball, Chenault. It is a Manga made the first man miss. Stayed on his feet for the touchdown.
Shoulder to shoulder, we go fight.
Welcome back to the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast for episode 18. Chase and I wanted to get together and do a quick rundown. Obviously, with everything going on with COVID, we're obviously not having a football season, at least in the Pac-12, in the Big Ten for this year in the fall. So far, they've said they're postponing with hopes of playing in the spring. We'll kind of touch on what that would look like in a bit. But first and foremost, just kind of wanted to, you know, go over what we were thinking with how this kind of whole situation went down. And right now the Big 12, SEC, and ACC are still planning to play. So we kind of wanted to touch on those as well. So Chase, I'll just kind of let you start it off. What was kind of your first reaction to the announcement that they were going to cancel? Because I mean, they basically released the schedule, what, a week or two before, and then canceled, you know, pretty much right after that. So,
yeah. So we're recording this on the Sunday of what I believe would have been the Rocky Mountain Showdown week.
So we were playing the fifth on the fifth because it was in Fort Collins. So we were a little.
Oh right.
It was a weird year. But this would have been the first. Later. But other teams would have been playing this weekend.
Right. So it's a weird feeling to be recording a podcast about how they're not playing. First of all, but as far as like being surprised, I don't think I was necessarily surprised by it. I was a little confused about, like, I don't know, I don't think anyone did that great of a job off the bat of explaining like what they were looking at that was different from what like the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 were looking at.
Yeah.
And it was kind of weird. It seemed like at the time there were a lot of people saying, I mean, I know like some of the Pac-12 guys straight up took shots at the SEC saying like their decision was based, the Pac-12's decision was like based in reality or something like that.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah. So a lot of the like health concerns, you know, I know it's confusing for a lot of people. I think, I think there's a lot of people that don't get it. There's definitely a lot of takes flying around the internet right now about like what they should be doing or whether they needed to do it or whatever. But I wouldn't say I was surprised. I think, you know, there's a lot of liability there. It's hard to justify like having football and not having people on campus, and that was definitely the case for like a couple of the California schools in particular. So it's like, on one hand, there's some stuff that makes you think, oh, that's weird that they would cancel, like, college-age kids are not necessarily, like, the at-risk group and all that stuff. So that seemed a little surprising. And it's surprising that three major conferences just are like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. And then two of them are like, no, we absolutely can't play at all. So there's definitely, like, no there's no like cohesion, I guess, in the NCAA. But I don't know.
I mean, I thought kind of like how you mentioned, everyone had their different opinions. You know, that the SEC had their medical board, the Pac-12, Big Ten, they all had their own medical boards of doctors that were kind of basing their decisions off of. One thing I did see was that the SEC only had two independent medical advisors, whereas the rest were either from the school, you know, graduated from the school, or were working for a school-affiliated hospital or something along those lines, whereas the Pac-12 had, I think, like 7 out of the 14 were independent. So, I mean, I feel like that right there is kind of a – I don't know if red flag is the right word, but, I mean, I don't think anybody was really surprised that the SEC was gung-ho about playing regardless. No, I mean, I think
not at all.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a given. But I think the weird thing is that they didn't all do, like, I mean, it should, because they're all a part of the NCAA, they should have had like a governing, not governing, but like a group of combined officials from each conference, right, instead of everyone just doing their own
something
thing
like that. Yeah,
it's like, I mean, the NCAA is so controlling over so many things, you'd think that they'd want to have their say in this because of all the revenue that they're going to probably lose just from the two conferences playing, not necessarily Pac-12 because Pac-12 network sucks, but the Big Ten network is a huge moneymaker. And so I'm curious as to how they didn't think that they could, you know, step their toes into that water. But, you know, kind of like you had mentioned, I wasn't really surprised. The liability is definitely what kind of throws me for a loop, because they, even though, you know, the college age kids aren't at risk necessarily, I mean, I know you know more about this than I do, but there have been some baseball players that have tested positive for COVID and then they recovered, but they have like cardiac issues or like something along those lines. And so for people that are like in the best shape of their lives, in better shape than most people around the country, to have lingering issues, I think it's kind of a dangerous idea to throw all these kids on a football field with a bunch of other college age kids going to school with them. So that was kind of odd to me. And the liability is definitely the biggest part. Like, I mean, what does the SEC do if a kid does get COVID? And I mean, hopefully this doesn't happen, but if a kid passes away or gets, you know, has to go on like on a ventilator, and those cause long-term issues as well. Like, how do you handle that without there being a ton of blowback? So I think the Pac-12 and the Big Ten made the right decision. And I think the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 are—I think they're making the wrong decision to play, and I don't even think that they're going to be able to make it through a full season, anyways. So,
yeah, I guess if we're getting into like, was it necessary? So my thing with whether or not it's necessary, basically the argument that they should be playing, there's like three different ones that I see mostly. So
from the couch doctors.
Yes, from the couch doctors, sure. The first one is that COVID doesn't affect their age group nearly as much. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I think the mortality rate for COVID cases for people in the age group of like 18 to 22 is 0.0094% or something like that. It's really, 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 really tiny, which is understandable, but My response to that is, okay, well, it's not zero, so you know that there someone had it and didn't make it, and that doesn't include, like what you were saying, so the cardiac issues in baseball, that's a condition called myocarditis, and it's just like inflammation of your heart. There's not like a ton out there showing like the long-term adverse effects, things like that. It can take you a few months to recover from it entirely. So I know that there's, I mean, it really, I guess my thing is, you got sick and it hurt your heart. Like, that should just raise some red flags, you know, whether the condition itself is bad or not. Like, that's some seriously, like, that's a serious effect. That's not just like you got the flu and got sick, you know?
Right.
So, so that's my response to that, is like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, they're looking at, okay, it's really, 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 really small likelihood that someone's gonna die, but it's not a complete 0% chance. And yes, NFL, NCAA athletes are usually in really, really good shape, but you're also talking about like some linemen who are 300 pounds plus. They're not exactly like the healthiest people in the world. They already probably have some heart issues, you know. I mean, like, it's not unheard of to have some unhealthy college football players. So for me, that kind of draws my attention. The other thing about that is that, yeah, we don't necessarily know. I mean, so I work in EMS, and we take people with COVID all the time, and the people who have recovered from COVID, and there's all kinds of people who have recovered from COVID, but now they like have an oxygen tank that they carry around with them that they never had before. And they have other lasting issues where it really took it out of him. So it's not like you just get sick and you're over it and it's fine. And I think that's like what they're worried about from a liability standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The other argument that I saw a lot was these kids are going to be safer at school in like a program where they're controlling where they're going and what they're doing, and then they would be at home where it's like unregulated. Okay, so my whole thing with that is, think way back when everything started. What was the one thing they told everyone to do?
Stay home.
At their freaking house.
Yeah.
So like, when did being away from home become like unsafe? You know, the most safe thing is that you're at your house, you only see your family, and that's it. No one else. Like, if you really want to be as safe as possible, that's the safest you're going to be. Is it good that they would be regulated here? Yeah, sure it is. But it doesn't mean like, I don't know, it doesn't mean that they're going to be safe. All it takes is one person getting it, and then the entire 100 squad football team is at risk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, 100 player football team is at risk. So it's not like you have the same level of safety. So I just completely disregard that argument. And there are a lot of people using it. Like, a lot of people using it.
And kind of going hand in hand with that, like, you can, even if you did have them at school or at campus controlling, you know, kind of what they're doing, they're still 18 to 24 year old kids. And guess what these kids do on the weekend? They go to parties with other 18 to 24 year old kids who are not under anybody's control. And they're kind of going wherever they want, whenever they want. I mean, for those of you that don't have anybody that's going to see you or know anyone, they actually sent out an email to all students that said, if you are caught partying, which is every college kid, if you are caught partying, you could face suspension. And they said, you know, if you are caught, you'll have to stay away from your classes. If you have any in-person classes, you have to stay away for 2 weeks. And then if you're caught again, then you risk suspension, possibly expulsion. But I mean, they're sending out this email. That's not going to stop anybody. I mean, do you think campus police has the time and energy to go around to every party, keep track of who they're catching at each party? And then, you know, they're going to suspend the entire, or not the entire, because there are some kids that probably don't party, but you're going to suspend 85% of the student population. It doesn't make sense. And so, I mean, those people will be interacting with football players. And so even if you do have them in at school, you can't control what they do once they leave the practice facility and they go home. You can't control who they have in their house or whose house they go to.
Right. Not to mention, I mean, look at baseball. Like, the Cleveland Indians not that long ago just had two guys that they punished for leaving their, like, breaking their protocols. And that's, like, professional athletes who are getting paid to not do things wrong. And now you're telling me that a bunch of college kids on the team are going to, like, not go out, not see other people, not... I mean, I think they reported that there was a group during like voluntary workouts that were still going out and doing other things, and then they came back and they all had to quarantine for 14 days at CU. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's the idea that some people think, oh yeah, they'll be incentivized to not do something like that where they break protocol and get sick and give it to other people. Like, that's just not gonna be the case. Like, the idea that you're relying on 18 to 22, 24 year old kids to to do everything right and like not make any of those mistakes, I just don't think that's a good idea personally for me. Yeah. I just don't think that's like actually going to work. And if in a perfect world, yeah, sure, they just don't go out, do any of those things, everyone stays safe, great. But the other thing about that is, I mean, and Rick George said it when he discussed the Pac-12 not playing. He was saying they felt that they didn't have the resources to properly like control the situation. Like, they didn't have the resources to test as much as they needed to test in order to like keep everyone safe at this time. And that was part of the decision. So like, even if you're going to get tested, if you really want to be safe, you have to get tested all the time. And not every college program is going to have the ability to do that, you know? So
it's not cheap either.
No, it's not cheap. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about, even in the best case scenario, you're getting tested. It takes I mean, they have a few different like instant test programs, but I don't know the accuracy of those, and I don't know the actual, you know, ability that the school has to get them. I don't think they're not, like you said, it's expensive stuff, so they probably wouldn't be able to go with like that instant rapid test for everybody. So you're talking about at least, I mean, I think in the majors their test takes like a day or something, like they take it, they find out the next day. Mm-hmm. So you're still talking about you take a test, and if you're going through the season, you're not going to have like pauses every single time you take tests. So they're going to take a test, they're going to go to practice, and then they're going to find out the next day that they had COVID. And then you're like, all right, how many
people? The whole team's
infected. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just not like a realistic thing. And then the last argument is just about football, really, and about revenue and about everything that they're going to lose by not playing, which is something that I guess we can get into now with the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC deciding to play versus the Pac-12 and the Big 10 and what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, that really is. I feel like if college football wasn't such a moneymaker, there wouldn't even be any discussion. It would be, all right, we're shutting it down for the year. I mean, I don't think any schools having any hesitation with cutting, you know, I guess skiing isn't everywhere, but like skiing or cross country, you know, those events that just, they are good to bring kids in for athletic scholarships, but they just don't bring in the revenue. So, I mean, when you have those sports, they're not going to hesitate to shut those down. But football, for most schools across the country, football is a majority of their revenue. And then you have a select few like, you know, Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, where basketball has a good chunk as well. But right. Other than that, football is really the big money maker for every single athletic department. And so by cutting it down, I mean, I don't even know. I don't have any numbers in front of me, but I know everyone in the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are going to be hurting. Pac-12 more than the Big 12 because they don't have the TV 10. Revenue. Yeah. Or Big 10, sorry. But they're going to be hurting a little bit more. I don't know how, you know, they're planning to recover. I know ADs across the country have had to do staff and budget cuts, and I don't know if that's going to be enough when you take out a full year of not only just ticket sales, but you're also losing out on concessions. You know, people probably aren't going to buy as much in terms of apparel because they don't have anything to go to. There's just a lot of things that go into it. And with the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 playing, I just don't foresee it working out that way. I mean, because what happens if you do take a test and say it was an offensive lineman? Then you're quarantining your whole offensive line for 2 weeks. So you either have two options, really. You postpone the game that you were going to play that week, or you cancel it. And say you go with option A and postpone it. Okay, well, what happens when the defensive line gets a positive, or the defensive backs? I mean, different groups can get it. And then what, you either play without that entire unit, you throw in some people and just hope they can figure it out from back when they played that position for two games in high school, or you postpone the game. And you can only postpone so many games before you're getting to the point where, okay, we aren't even going to be able to get into an 8-game season if we want to do that. So, what do they think is going to happen when they have to take out an entire, you know, unit from a game? I just don't understand. I don't know how they think they're going to be able to make it work past a few weeks. And I think the same thing is going to happen with the NFL.
I mean, yeah. So the NFL, I think the NFL is kind of a different story, right? Because you're talking about a bunch of people, their only job is to play football.
Yeah.
They're paid to play football. I don't know if you've watched like any of the Hard Knocks stuff, but they get tested all the time, constantly. And they're looking, they're like constantly trying to spread out and do all that stuff. And colleges can try to do the same stuff. But I know already, like, there are already teams that are reporting more, you know, cases, like not full on outbreaks necessarily, but getting cases, getting people sick, just with practices starting up and going, you know. So basically, I feel like this is going to go one of two ways. Either A, everything goes off mostly without a hitch. You know, people get sick here and there, but nothing really bad happens, and they're able to play whatever season they're trying to do, 10 games. And they
get first time the SEC will play more than 8 conference games.
Right, right. I know it's freaking crazy. They're gonna be like there's gonna be like a 4-loss SEC team that's in the top 5 or something yep. like that. And so they'll have that'll happen. They'll play it. They'll go through. I don't know what kind of like championship thing they're looking at. I don't know what kind of format they're gonna go through, but they're gonna do it, and they're probably gonna make a big chunk of revenue on it because they're going to be the only thing going on, and it'll be great for them and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. Although the Big Ten, I guess, is talked about potentially starting in November instead of waiting until the spring, which I don't totally get that entirely, but whatever. That's a different discussion. So either that's going to happen, they're going to do great, they're going to have great revenue, or the other option is going to happen, and they're going to have a bunch of games that end up getting canceled because they have too many people get sick, and then you're talking about like kind of a weird piece together season anyway, and it's not, you know, it's not the same product, and maybe they have to pause for long chunks of time. You know, like it won't be what they're anticipating it's going to be. And mm-hmm. it ends up being bad, and you end up getting mm-hmm. a lot of people who get sick. And God forbid, like, somebody gets really sick and has some actual problems, you know. Like, God forbid, someone on one of these teams gets sick and actually passes away. And mm-hmm. then the whole country is shocked by like, oh my gosh, this actually happened. And meanwhile, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are sitting there like, yeah,
like we told you
we told you this could happen. It's very unlikely, but it could happen, you know. And that's pretty much what you're talking about, is revenue is a problem, but are you willing to risk that possibly one person? It's still unlikely, but like, you can't say it can't happen. Like, you can't tell me that it absolutely 100% no one is going to get horribly sick and have like really big issues or even die from this thing, because there is a small chance that it could happen. And that's what you're talking yeah. about. Like, is it worth the risk? Pretty much. And for the Big 12, SEC, ACC, it is worth the risk, I guess, for them. They've decided it's fine and they're just going to go for it. That said, I know players still can opt out. I think Ja'Marr Chase announced today.
I did not see that.
Yeah. So, like, the number one wide receiver in the country this year decided he's just not going to play. He's going to focus on the NFL. So, you know, we still could have more of those, and it still could look completely different by the time the season actually starts and midway through the season than we think it will now. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see which of those two routes it goes through, because honestly, to, I guess, getting into like more of the ramifications of the two conferences postponing, if everything goes and it goes well enough and the Big 12, SEC, ACC, they get that revenue, it's going to be tough, especially for the Pac-12 to come back from that. I don't know how they're going to be able to, really. They're just going to be so far behind. They're already behind. And to be more behind would just be a tragedy for them, really.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Oregon is really the only team that's sort of competing financially with the other schools and the other conferences, and that's solely because of Phil Knight. It's not because they have like a bunch of other donors that are going to be like around forever. They just have Phil Knight, and right. Who knows what's going to happen once. I mean, I'm sure he's got some sort of trust set up for Nike to pay out to Oregon after he's gone, but still, I mean, eventually that well is going to run dry. And so, I mean, right, unless something happens that changes the TV revenue and the conference distribution, like you said, if they do end up playing and they get all this to work, then the Pac-12 is just going to be in a world of hurt from falling even further behind. And the Big Ten will be a little bit down, but again, they still have the TV probably revenue to fine. Match the SEC, yeah. So they'll be fine. In terms of like, you know, we already kind of touched on the revenue, but the thing I think this is going to impact the most, regardless of, and this kind of even goes away from the three that are playing, the two that are not conference wise, recruiting is going to take it's going to be a weird year and a half for recruiting, because not only are kids not able to see colleges, which, I mean, we all know, you know, a lot, especially CU fans, for whatever reason, like to say, just get him to campus.
Right.
Like some magical, like, 18-year-old kid's going to get there and be like, oh, shit, Flatirons, I'm going here.
Yeah.
Like, that. I mean, as much as we'd like to think that would happen, that's not how it happens. But, I mean, I think once you get it down to, like, a top four, top eight, whatever, then seeing the campuses actually makes a difference. You know, I don't think a lot of people go to Lincoln and say, oh, this is a great place to be.
Right, so, yeah, exactly.
I mean, they get there because, you know, Scott Frost is recruiting them to what his vision of winning football 4-8 is. So that's the reality of it, is you can't get these kids to campus. And then on top of that, a lot of these kids in most states, I mean, I don't know which states are and which states aren't. I'm sure a lot of the southern states are allowing football to happen for high schoolers. But Colorado's not. I know a lot of states around here have either postponed or just altogether canceled football for the high schools this season. So the recruiting services are going to have a hard time evaluating kids based off of their, you know, their junior year film or their sophomore year film. The coaches aren't going to get to evaluate these guys. There's not going to be any camps for these guys to go to and get evaluated at. So I think there's going to be a lot of maybe busts that come out of this next class or two, that people that were ranked highly just because they kind of were going off sophomore film, they didn't develop much more past that or junior film. And then they got to an Alabama and they just couldn't pan out because they weren't evaluated after that. And so I think the recruiting is going to take a weird turn for a little bit just because of everything that's happened. And who knows, I could see it playing out better for the schools that are behind, because they're going to get some kids that weren't ranked as highly just because of everything that happened. Or it could, you know, who knows, that could be completely wrong and they're going to get the evaluations, you know, mostly right, and it's still going to, the balance of power is kind of going to stay where it is. But I think recruiting is going to be weird for a while here.
Oh yeah, I think they'll probably have a higher bust potential, but you know, you might also have like a higher upside potential on some of these like three-star guys that maybe would have just absolutely blown up their senior year but didn't get a chance, you know, or whatever. So you're right, it'll be interesting. It'll be kind of weird to see like how that pans out. Honestly, that's the problem with even talking about this, is we just know so little about what's actually going to happen. If they're even going to play in the spring. I mean, that said, if the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC play in the fall, then the Pac-12 has to play in the spring. They like can't, if they just miss a season, I don't even know how that would look. Like,
it becomes the Power Four conference.
Right, exactly. if they just completely missed, I don't think they've said is out of the question, considering when they were talking about it before, they just pretty much said, like, yeah, we're going to try it in the spring to see if our resources are more readily available and if, you know, we have a plan that works and all that stuff. So I'm hoping that they can figure it out. I'm hoping that they can do it safe, you know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens, man. It's going to be interesting.
The thing that's weird for me about a spring season, and as much as I don't like the guy, I think the Big Ten Network had Urban Meyer on, kind of asking him about everything after the Big Ten announced that they were going to cancel this or postpone the season. And they said, what do you think about a spring season? And he immediately said, no shot. There's no chance it works. And right. His reasoning was kind of, one, I mean, you're thinking things are going to be that much different when the time comes around in the spring, which, unless there's a vaccine, probably won't be that much different. And then on top of that, okay, say you do play in the spring. Your season ends May, June, depending on when you start, when you finish, if there's a championship. That's the other thing that is kind of way up in the air. Okay, so if these three conferences that are playing do get through a season, are they going to have their own separate right. championship?
Right.
And then the Big 12 or Big 10 and Pac-12 can have their, like, I don't, like, so many things, like so many little things that go into this. But, you know, the spring season, if it ends in May, then what are they going to just start again in August? So they get June, July off, and then they're back in August.
Right.
And I mean, football's a physical sport. Everyone knows that. I mean, you need some time to kind of relax and recover after a full season, especially when you're going against the best college athletes in the world football wise. So do you delay the fall season for next year? I really hope they can pull it off, but kind of, you know, Urban Meyer was very confident that it wouldn't happen because it just doesn't make sense. And I kind of see why, just because of how compacted the time frame would be, in addition to not being able to give these guys a rest. So I don't know. It's a weird idea to look at, but personally, I'm thinking that we probably won't see college football for CU at least until 2021, around this time next year, which is a bummer, but that's kind of like, I feel like that's the reality of the situation we're in.
Right. It's kind of like, it's like we've said already, you're looking at it and thinking, I think it's hard for anyone to look at them and see them play and not feel like a little bit of almost guilt about, like, this just seems, you know, you don't know that it's 100% safe, you know? And if I think the best case scenario at this point for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten is probably they. Yeah, so I think at this point, the best case scenario for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten would be you watch. I mean, outside of if everyone can figure out a safe way to do this, their best case scenario would be they see the three conferences that are playing, and they work together, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, and they say, all right, let's get this thing started at like a specific time. And maybe it's more like winter and less spring, you know, and they try to get that going so they can have I don't know, maybe they start playing in December or something, or November, like the Big Ten mentioned. But that would take everything going really well really quickly and everyone figuring out that this is okay. So it's not likely, but their best case scenario is that they both start at the same time and then they play their conference schedules. Maybe they could even add like a little non-conference thing if they can figure out how to make that work, you know? And then you just have CU play Nebraska and Michigan State and then go into their conference slate. And I don't hate that.
I wouldn't hate that either.
But, you know, figure something like that out. I think like that's their at least for the Pac-12, that would be like their best case scenario. Because if the Pac-12 ends up by themselves and the Big Ten like kind of does their own thing, like the Big Ten can survive on its own, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like the Pac-12 is going to need like that sort of unity, kind of like seems like their togetherness to really be able to pull this thing off. And I think they need to start. I don't think they could wait until later into spring, like you said, because yeah, if they end in May or whatever you said, May or June, mm-hmm. or something, like that's going to be impossible to go right into the next season. So they need to start earlier. Maybe they only play like 8 games or something, you know, but start it earlier, keep it short, and just get through it, and then shut everything down until it's ready to get going for the next season and hope for the best, because yeah, that's going to be tough.
Yeah. And one of the things that actually came out of all this craziness was, for I'm sure a lot of people saw something either on Twitter or if you're on any of the message boards, the Pac-12 players, it's called the Pac-12, I don't know if they have a official name, but I just call them the Pac-12 player group. They kind of took advantage of the situation, and I don't blame them, because first and foremost, I mean, they because they were even considering playing this season, it was kind of just a slap in the face to the people that say that these athletes aren't exploited, because at that point it was just saying, we're going to play this season because of the revenue you bring in, even though it's going to put you at danger, danger. So I mean, that they again took advantage of the situation, created a list of basically demands that they wanted met before they would play for the football season. And this was obviously before they decided to cancel or postpone. I keep saying cancel, but in my mind, it probably is canceled. But they before they postponed, you know, they had a list of demands. And so when you look down kind of the list of things that they wanted, a lot of them make a lot of sense. Some of them probably a little unrealistic, just because, you know, college football doesn't bring in the same amount of revenue as the NFL. It's just not quite at that level. But first and foremost, their first demand really was health and safety protection. So, you know, they wanted kids to have the option to opt out of the season without any punishment, which I think that the Pac-12 was kind of leaning that way anyways. They weren't going to punish anybody for opting out. Although we did have Washington State, and I have no idea how much truth there is to this, but apparently there were a few players that wanted to opt out and were told to clean out their lockers. So who knows how much truth that has to it, but I would not be surprised at all if that happened. So their main thing was, you know, being safe if from losing eligibility if they decided to opt out. They wanted to basically disallow waivers that removed Pac-12 liability if they were to play. And then just, you know, basic safety standards like allowing the testing and everything like that. On top of that, they wanted to protect all the sports. So Stanford was one of the first countries, I think, in the nation to do this. But they said, we know we're not going to be able to place a lot of sports this year. We're not going to bring in a lot of revenue. We're going to cut a lot of sports across the board. So they cut a lot of sports in the fall. I guess it wasn't just fall, but fall and spring sports that just weren't bringing in money. And they said, okay, we aren't going to do this. We're just going to cancel these sports. We're not going to do them any longer. And we're going to bring it back down to a smaller pool. So they wanted to kind of say those sports have to be reinstated. And then we also want to make sure that none of the other sports can be, you know, removed for something like this. So before we kind of get to the rest of the demands, was there anything in those first two that kind of stuck out to you, or anything that seemed like it was either a good idea or bad demand? I mean, what was kind of your thoughts on the first couple mandates they put in there?
I mean, as far as the first few, like the all the health and safety standards, that just seems like pretty self-explanatory to me. Like, I don't think that anyone should, like, I mean, it's there are certain things about football, I guess I should explain it this way. There are certain things about football that there's like inherent risk in the game. I mean, it's like brutal and violent, and there's a lot of like danger associated with that, which is something that these people who have grown up playing it and decided to go to college and keep playing it, like, that's something that they know and accepted. So I just want to differentiate between that and the virus that's going around. That's not necessarily something that they were like, oh yeah, that's something that I'm signing up for no matter what, you know, like they have every right to be nervous about that and want to make sure that they're safe when they're playing. So, mm-hmm. I feel like all the health and safety stuff is good. I don't see anything wrong with that. I think really what they're just saying is, we want you guys to have a plan to make sure that we're going to be okay. We don't want to just go into a season with you saying, all right, well, we're just going to figure it out as we go. You know, yep. They don't want to be guinea pigs. Like, they want their schools and their conference to protect them from, you know, getting sick. So that all seems good to me. As far as the cutting of the programs, I understand the request. I think it kind of is something that they requested to cover their own asses a little bit, because they know that by threatening to opt out, that's kind of who they're putting in danger, is the other programs. So I get it. I shouldn't necessarily say that, because they could just, I'm sure a lot of them have friends that are in other athletics programs, and they don't want them to lose their sport and their scholarship and anything else, which is great, and I'm glad that they requested that. But the fact of the matter is, I think the school should do everything that they possibly can to not cut programs. But, you know, and I mean, like, CU has kind of done that. Like, I think the AD took a pay cut. I think a bunch of people across the board took pay cuts so that they could try and avoid losing programs. And I think they've done a pretty good job up to this point. So I think that's great. That's in good faith. I just think that's going to be a hard thing to achieve, especially with just like schools and revenue and how that works. Like, they can't just, you know, they're balanced in this system of football brings us this much every year, and we know we have it, and so we know that we can use it for all these other sports. But when that's gone, like, they have to get the money from somewhere. They can't just like make it out of nothing, you know. And they right. could just take a hit. Like that's kind of what they're asking them to do, I think, is, you know, yeah, you're going to take a hit this year, but we don't want you to get rid of everybody. I just think that's a little bit of a tougher ask. I think it's a good one to ask for. I understand why they're doing it. I just think it could be a difficult one to achieve, you know.
Yeah, that's and I think another thing, one of the things they said is they should use endowment funds to preserve these sports. But what unfortunately with the way endowments work is a lot of them, the money was donated for a specific purpose, and it wasn't right. for, you know, athletic use or anything like that. Like, so for Stanford has a $27.7 billion endowment.
Right, they have a huge endowment, yeah.
But Stanford is a academics-first university, and so all the people that have donated that want that to go towards furthering the academic prestige of that school. You know, for anyone that's watched Stanford on TV, they never really have that many fans at their stadium.
Right, right.
Because they're, again, an academics-first college. So, yeah, like you said, that's definitely a tougher ask. But the medical or the COVID protection stuff, that's all, I mean, that's basically common sense. That should be, right. that should have been, you know, put up to the front of the docket for any Pac-12 administrator regardless. So those right. were kind of, yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, yeah, they're just asking for a plan. Like they should have had one already, but they clearly didn't. Everyone yep. was kind of like crossing their fingers and hoping for it to work out. But they didn't. So the players were like, hey, there's no plan. Like, give us a plan. Make sure we're going to be safe. That's pretty much yeah. it for that first one. So,
yep. And then, so the last two demands they had are two segments. So the third one was basically to end racial injustice in college sports and society. So I think the, you know, obviously working to do the society part is on everybody. So I think for the Pac-12, and these other conferences, if something were to pop up like this in other conferences, they can really kind of focus on the college sports because, again, football does have such a big pull. So their first, you know, segment under the End Racial Injustice was they wanted a permanent civic engagement task force of leaders and experts of the player's choice to kind of address outstanding issues. And then they also wanted 2% of conference revenue directed by players in partnership with the conference to support financial aid for low-income Black students, community initiatives, and development programs for college athletes on campus. Again, you know, I don't know the inner workings of the athletic department budget, but I don't know how much 2%, if that's a realistic number or not. I'm sure that they didn't pull this number out of thin air. They probably, you know, did some research on what they could do with that 2%. And I think a lot of this all kind of stems back to how excessive the pay is for, first and foremost, Larry Scott. That dude is making way too much money for how incompetent he is. But just like college coaches in general, I mean, there are coaches across the country making millions every year. I think that could probably be cut down a little bit, and that money could be used to either, you know, pay the players or do something like this with the helping this racial injustice issue we have in our country. And then the third demand under that was they wanted to form the annual Pac-12 Black College Athlete Summit. That is a mouthful. With a guaranteed representation of 3 athletes of their choice for every school. So I think that was just kind of basically like a yearly summit to kind of see how they're performing and kind of reaching these goals they set initially in this document. So I think all of those are great ideas. Again, I just don't know how the budget works, what works with that, and how much they can actually, you know, push towards that without taking a hit while these coaches are still taking excessive salaries. I think it needs to be a combination of both of those, you know, coaches and administrators taking cuts plus using that revenue for things like this. So that's the third demand. And then the fourth demand, and this one is of no surprise to anybody, they want basically NLI, name, likeness, and image. They want to be able to market themselves, brand themselves, make money off of themselves, which I think everybody, no matter which side of the argument you're on, pay the players or not pay the players, I think most people are in agreement that they should be able to make money off of their own image, even if the university is not paying for it. So they want to have that, and they also want what I think is probably the best, you know, bullet in this entire document is they want medical insurance that is selected by the players to cover them for 6 years after college athletic ability ends. And the reason I think that's such a huge one is because there are so many kids that get done with college sports, and if they don't go to the NFL, then they don't have access to the doctors that they had in college anymore, and they have lingering knee issues, you know, brain trauma issues, anything just from taking all getting beat up all these 4 years and really their whole lives of playing football. So I think getting 6 years of medical coverage would be huge. But all of these things kind of flow into this one document that they submitted to the Pac-12 leaders and said, this is what we want, otherwise we're not playing.
Didn't they say something about, I know for revenue, I thought they asked too for like a 50% revenue share or something like that, right?
Yeah, they did ask for 50% of the conference's total revenue, which initially when I first heard that, I was like, that's a really high number. How could they even afford that? But then I found out the reason they picked that number specifically is because that's approximately what the payout is to the NFL players if you take all the salaries based off of the revenue. So that's where they got the number. I have no idea how that could work. Again, the reason I don't think it would at that high of a number is because they're not just covering football. They're covering all the sports, kind of like we've already talked about. Whereas in the NFL, they're just covering the organization and that's it.
Right. And I guess there's a lot to unpack in the second half of those. So the first or the third, I guess the third bullet point that you were talking about, the funding that they want to do, which is it's a really good cause, and I think it makes perfect sense that they would use that. The one thing I was going to say about that is 2% definitely doesn't seem like that big of a number, and I definitely think that there are plenty of ways that they could get enough money to actually fund those programs. For example, if you look at the Pac-12, I saw something about this today, I believe. The amount that the Pac-12 is paying just to lease their corporate headquarters is like more than the Big Ten, SEC, ACC, and Big 12 combined.
By a long shot.
Yeah, because they decided to be in San Francisco for some reason, because like Larry Scott wanted to live there, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
So like they could move to pretty much anywhere else. Anywhere else they could move, and they would save millions and millions and millions.
Like Las Vegas, which is where they're going to have the Pac-12 championship, right, exactly. And it's dirt cheap to live there.
Yeah, so, and then it's like, boom, there you go. Fund all those programs, you know, no problem. I think as far as the 50% revenue, I think it's less simple than the NFL, obviously, like you were saying. I mean, because the NFL, you're talking about essentially, like, the owners aren't out of their 50%. They're not having to pay for a bunch of other programs. I mean, it pays for, you know, different things, stadium upkeep, you know, things like that, like stuff that they have to go through, but they're pocketing, you know, a large chunk of that. And I don't think the schools are taking home quite as much after they spread it out to pay for different programs and, you know, everything else that goes into a academic institution. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a number in there somewhere that they could agree on, you know. I think NLI is a big thing for players. I think that would definitely help a lot. I actually kind of think it's ridiculous anyway that they can't use their own name, image, and likeness to profit off anything. Like, I don't know. I don't understand how that's even possible. Like, I don't know. That's crazy to me. I think they should have been able to do that a long time ago. But as far as just earning some portion of the revenue, personally, I feel like they probably asked for 50% knowing that there wasn't a chance in hell that they were going to get 50%.
Start so, high.
You know, you got to work down from somewhere, right? I think that's probably their thinking with that one. I don't think that they would ever end up getting close to 50, but who knows? Maybe they can settle on something smaller. I don't know how that even works out. And since they released these things, you know, it basically got shut down because the conferences decided not to play. The Pac-12 did. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they like have to revisit that whenever they can come back or what happens there, how that works out.
Yeah. And so I'll actually, in the description, I'll leave a link to the it's a Mercury News article, which I like reading the Mercury. It's a, I think it's, is it Oregon? No. California based?
Yeah.
California. Yeah, it's a California based news. And they just have some guys that I like to read on there that do a lot of Pac-12 coverage, like John Wilner. I really like listen to John Wilner, but I'll just put the link to this article for anyone that doesn't really know much about this or hasn't heard much about it. So that way you can kind of read through all these demands, just because there's a lot more than we went over. We could probably do a whole hour long episode over everything that's in here, but obviously put it in here. We just kind of wanted to touch on it. The only other thing I really kind of wanted to talk about in relation to this was, I feel like this was kind of a big step in changing how college football is going forward. I mean, I think by putting this out there, it was like the first step towards changing the whole amateur model that the college football system is, basically like a farm system for the NFL, which is what everyone always talks about when they're talking about how they're kind of being exploited. But it's definitely a farm system for the NFL. And I think this is kind of really the first step. And who knows if this could kind of cause a ripple effect when things are back to normal. I mean, are we going to see conference realignment to people that want to be in the big conference or the big super conferences? Or are we going to see just basically the NCAA lose control over football? The big schools kind of go off on their own and are under their own jurisdiction. Who knows? But I think this is kind of like that first step towards pretty much, I feel like college football is going to be changed forever once things are back to normal because of this going out. And other players, I know there are other groups in other conferences that have come up with similar ideas or want to come up with a similar draft. But because, again, with everything going on, they haven't been able to put it out there right now. So I have no idea what this will look like, but I think it's definitely going to spur some change.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think, like, at a bare minimum, just getting players to the point where they can use their own name, image, likeness is a big deal. And I think that just in and of itself makes everything look a lot different, you know, as far as, like, how they feel about being exploited or whatever. At least being able to make something off of themselves, I think, will be a big step forward if they can make that happen. Like I said, I think personally, like, getting a portion of the revenue, I think, is a long ways away if it's going to happen. But, you know, like I said, I think you ask for everything knowing you're going to get, you know, something, some part of it. So it'll be interesting to see going ahead, like, how that affects even things like recruiting. And, you know, like, can your school market you better? You know, like, is that going to become a thing? Is that going to become a factor? You know, can they get you to more opportunities to earn? I think that will be, like, a really interesting aspect of everything. And I have no idea if it's going to make recruiting even more skewed than it already is, like, or if it's going to, you know, even the playing field a little bit or what. I have no idea how that's all going to turn out, but we'll see. And as far as everything else, you know, yeah, I think if nothing else, them forming this group and coming out with something is basically them recognizing the power that they do have. And I think that's a good thing. Like, it's them recognizing the ability that they have to use their platform to raise, you know, awareness of issues that are important to them, you know? So, and I think we're seeing a lot of that around sports right now, honestly, all over the place. So I think that's good for them. And, you know, I hope that kind of stuff continues. And I hope we get to a point where I don't have to start thinking about, like, what sport I'm watching on TV and then have a little bit of guilt on the inside about, yep, like, ah, oh, man, like, I love watching college football, but, man, it sucks that they're not getting paid for it. And, like, yep, you know, I love this, but, man, that guy just blew out his knee and he'll probably never walk the same. Like, that's horrible, you know?
Yeah, so, or, like, the guys that, like, get hurt and then they can't play in the NFL and then they don't have any coverage after college.
Right,
like,
exactly. Yeah, that stuff's, and then, horrible, they struggle. Yeah, so, you know, the things like, yeah, having health insurance or access to the same kind of treatment that they had when they were playing, I think that would be amazing, and I hope that they can make some of that stuff work, you know.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think. Again, like you said, that they did recognize their power, because if all these players across the country decide to opt out, then there goes your revenue too. So I mean, they do have the power. It's just now that they've kind of recognized that, and they put something together that at least can start that conversation.
Right.
But the only thing I really wanted to touch on that you mentioned was, I don't, like you said, I don't know if it's going to even the playing field or skew recruiting even more than it already is. But what I do think could happen is you could see more, you know, higher ranked players, individual, like one or two, go to schools that don't typically get them, because instead of being, you know, the 12th best player at Alabama, you're going to be the best player on that team, and you're going to be able to get all those sponsorship deals.
To taking all the revenue for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see that kind of happening, but like you said, I have no idea if it'll overall skew it more or even the playing field, but whenever that does come around, it'll be very interesting to, when did the NCAA mandate that everybody had to have name, image, and likeness ready to go? Was it 2021 season?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it.
I think it was 2021 season. But yeah. So it's coming soon. And the sooner the better, because I just want to start playing NCAA football again. I miss that game.
Yeah, that's 100%. That's really what everybody wants. That's really what everyone wants back is NCAA football. So
the players even want it back.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens. And as far as like skewing the recruiting, like, it's already pretty skewed. Let's be honest. There's like five teams that take in every 5-star player right now. Anyway, so how much worse can it really get? Like,
it can't get much worse.
Yeah. So hopefully it goes the other way. Hopefully you're right, and you get some guys who are big names going to other places just so that they can increase their like earning potential. You know, instead of being like the 10th guy and getting your deals are like representing some car dealership in Tuscaloosa, you know, you could like go somewhere else and be like the biggest thing out there, you know? So
exactly.
So we'll see.
Yeah. But, I think for the most part that covers kind of everything we were planning to go over. Unless there's anything you kind of wanted to touch on, I think for the most part, you know, who knows when we'll be back recording again, obviously with no football this season. Not really much we can podcast about, but yeah. Who knows? Hopefully we'll be back in the spring. If not, probably fall we'll be back and seeing how the Carl Durrell era starts out at CU.
We'll be watching very closely to see what's going to happen, if anything is going to happen, when they're going to make it work to get playing. I mean, it's funny, like, we have some young talent on the team, and now it just feels like that everyone's excited to see, and now we're just waiting even longer. Yep. Waiting. So,
like, finally going to have a QB, like a new, like, we're going to probably have a freshman QB starting for the first time in who knows how long. So, yeah. But we'll have to wait for a while to see that. But thanks for tuning in to this episode. Hopefully we are back sooner than later, but whenever we are back, we'll let you guys know.
All right. Thanks for listening. As always, Skull Buffs.
Skull Buffs.